to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay, and in the studio with me, we welcome back, oh my God, you'll know exactly what I mean if you encountered the USA game with me, 13 goals, and that was your catchphrase, Rene Hector, welcome back.
Feels like home now.
Spurs defender and, of course, one of our newbies here on these World Cup editions of the Offside Rule. On that note, how's our theme tune coming along, Renee?
Oh, I'm still working on it. Still got a couple more podcasts.
Sounds like you've not done much at all.
I've still got a couple more podcasts to go, so I've got a little bit of time to think of something.
Well, you've just told me that your cousin's Carol Decker from Taupau.
Yes.
Major fact about Rene Hector. I'm expecting big things.
I'll see what I can work up.
Well, we've got not one guitar player in the studio, Renee. Not two. Producer Abby's just told me that she also plays, but three guitar players. This is insane because making his Offside Rules studio debut, it's guitarist and host of the Arsenal Women Arscast podcast, writer for Ars Blog and Brazilian football writer for Samba Foot. It's hello to Tim Stillman.
Hello there.
I feel like you need to give us a little guitar riff. Could you give us a Brazilian phrase, Tim, of huge Brazilian knowledge to sum up today's games?
Yeah, certainly. So a Portuguese phrase that is used in exactly the circumstance where a team takes the lead and loses. O jogo virou, which means the game turned, literally.
Okay.
So, that is very much the story of this game, I think.
Well, we're going to be moving on to the games in just a second. As ever, you can keep up with the Offside Rule at Offside Rule Pod, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere you look. Also on our website, offsiderulepodcast.com. Loads of colour pieces there, things you might have missed at the World Cup so far. Check it out. Plenty of great content there for you to have a look at. All right, let's get to it. And there's only one place to start.
Once a jolly swagman camped by a billabong, under the shade of a coolabah tree, he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. He sang as he watched and
I don't think I've heard that since I was at Brownies, producer Abby. Thank you very much. A bit of waltzing Matilda there, in case you needed a reminder, mate. Well, we were served up a treat this Thursday afternoon as Brazil and Australia took to the field in Montpellier. Australia coming up trumps 3-2. VAR the key player with handballs, penalties, own goals, offsides, deep breath, all of that came together to make this into, well, I think anyway, arguably one of the best games of the tournament so far. We're going to deal with the match chronologically to get the best out of it because we need to relive it moment by moment. Okay, so Marta made her way back into the starting 11, Tim, at the expense of Beatriz. How did she look on her first run out?
She still looked a little bit rusty, to be honest, but then again, she kind of always looks rusty playing for Brazil. At the moment, the last couple of years or so, everyone looks rusty playing for Brazil, quite frankly, but she had to come off at half time again. I still don't think she's quite right for this tournament, but nevertheless, she got her goal, which I know we'll come on to, which is delightful for her because that means she's now scored in 5 World Cups. And I'm personally just so pleased that she comes away from that tournament with at least that.
It is nice. Yeah, I would argue whether she should be there. But, you know, I get as a source of inspiration, fair enough. Well, meanwhile, Australia readied themselves for the match, all guns blazing, judging by this from Alana Kennedy pre-match. She said, "I don't give a shit who Marta is. She's an opponent and I want to beat her." OK, thank you very much. Tough talking from the Matildas, Renee. Is that wise, saying stuff like that?
Probably not the best idea to maybe start talking like that until you've actually won the match. Obviously, they ended up doing that in the end. But to be honest, I actually think they were struggling until Marta and a couple of other of Brazil's best players actually came off. So I think that was a bit premature speaking, if I'm honest.
Oh, well, let's talk about Marta. Penalty.
With her left foot, she's got it!
On 27 minutes, cool and calm from Marta, what we'd expect from her. So that makes her the first player in World Cup history to score in 5 different tournaments, as you've alluded to, Tim. So 2003, 2007, 11, 15 and 19. A nice touch from her, though. I noticed she pointed to her boot when she scored.
Yeah, so her last boot sponsorship expired last summer. And something she's kept under wraps until this goal is that she has refused all boot sponsorship. And on her boot, she's carrying the symbol of gender equality. So you will notice that when she scored, she points to her boot. So she's gone completely without sponsorship for this tournament to make exactly this gesture. And again, I'm so delighted that she got the chance to do that, to score that goal and to make that really, really significant kind of symbol for the whole world to see.
That is a nice touch. Tell us the background behind that, because this Brazil team has been met with a lot of resistance, a lot of the players coming up against resistance. Just a bit of the background on Brazil for us, as you're the Brazilian football expert here in the room.
Yeah, sure. So a couple of years ago, they had a female coach called Emily Lima, who frankly was stitched up by the CBF. They didn't give her the friendly games that she asked for. They didn't give her the environment she asked for. And they sacked her very quickly after some poor results. They rehired Vadão, their old coach, who is not that popular, both with the fans and the squad. Quite a few players went on strike, including Cristiani. Formiga retired, although at her age, that was perhaps not so much a political kind of protest, but she came back into the fold and they lost 9 games in a row coming into this tournament. And that's not because they're a bad team. Just look at some of the players in that team. It's because the morale is really, really low. The coach, quite frankly, is not very good. And I think a lot of the players know this. So they've come into this tournament in complete and utter disarray, quite frankly.
All right, well, not a bad performance from them at all then today when you consider all that. OK, well, let's return to the players. We're reliving this moment by moment, folks. Great pressure from Australia in the first half, but they ruined it with a lot of sloppy passes. Goal 2.
Tabina, 2 in the middle. Christian! Guides the header into the corner.
Well, defensively, Australia opened up for this goal. Lovely bit of play and a great ball over for Cristiano, who looks miles above the defender and heads the ball into the bottom right corner, René. Good goal for you.
I think it was a great number 9's play. I think she actually, the centre-back had no idea she was behind her. She actually took a step backwards so that she had space to run in front of her. So I think that was an extremely good goal from her. But at the same time, I think the centre-back's positioning wasn't great. That's definitely something that Australia need to look at if they're looking to progress into the next stages.
Cristiano, of course, a quality player for Brazil, her 4th goal of this World Cup so far. Arguably, though, the game-changing goal happened just before half-time. Cleared by Brazil, but it's followed up by a brilliant ball into the box from Australia. Bounces off Chloe Lugazo's head and falls to Caitlin Ford, who puts it in.
Ford was the closest player too. Good ball back in again. Little flick on. Here's Ford! And Australia have a goal back.
And that was a real killer for Brazil, actually. That came, you know, seconds before half-time. And then at half-time, Brazil have to make this switch where they have to take Marta off because she's not fit. Formiga in central midfield gets booked, so she's suspended for the final game as well. But I think they were really worried that she was getting a bit overrun in there. So I think all of that put together, because Vadão must have known he was going to take those two players off at that point. And I think the game just really, really turned on that. And you could see, actually, that this is a very old Brazil squad because, you know, once the second half begins, Australia turn it up a notch and Brazil just can't keep up with them.
Well, turn it up a notch, they did. Goal number 4, Chloe Lugazo with what looked like a great ball for Sam Kerr, but it never made it to her and instead just floats past the goalie.
Ball into the box! Does it get in there? Yes, it does!
And then goal 5, the most controversial of them all.
In towards Kerr. Well, she's had a look. Goal given. Australia lead for the first time in the match.
Just explain what happened.
So the cross comes in from Emily Van Egmond. She kind of drifts the ball into the area. Sam Kerr is standing about 2 yards offside. And this causes a lot of confusion in the Brazilian defence. The two centre-halves, Catellan and Monica, kind of see Sam Kerr over their shoulder. They probably have a notion that she's offside, but they kind of have to play the ball. So Monica gets the header and it drifts into the corner past the goalkeeper. And then we have this kind of pregnant pause.
Yes, a weird, yes, very much so.
For VAR to decide whether this is offside. The VAR doesn't seem to be able to decide, so the referee goes over to the monitor at the side and she gives the goal to Australia for 3-2.
So Kerr is in an offside position, but not committing an offside offence.
Indeed. And you know, this was a theme of the equaliser and the winning goal. Sam Kerr kind of being there and causing all of this dismay without actually touching the ball.
there you go. Sam Kerr, so good. She scores goals without scoring them, if you see what I mean. Strong opinions, though, from you, Renee. Was it or wasn't it a goal? Was it a shout or not?
In my opinion, it wasn't a goal. But for starters, I think the Brazilian centre-backs have to do better. I mean, in that situation, it's a 2v1. So I think the player behind should have... It looked like there was no communication. I think she should have taken ownership of the situation. However, I really don't understand that decision, how it wasn't offside. I think as the ball's been played and crossed in, Sam Kerr is clearly in an offside position. She's tried to affect the play somehow, even though she's probably a yard off the ball. She's tried to affect the play. So for me, that's offside all day long. I really don't understand how the referees decided that she wasn't involved in that play, because if Sam Kerr's not there, then the defenders are probably going to let the ball run through to the goalkeeper. So that doesn't make sense to me. I think Brazilian are hard done by there.
And it just seems in this tournament particularly that life is being made impossible for defenders now. You know, you can't have your hand in an unnatural position. You can't have your foot in an unnatural position. If someone's 2 yards offside and you play it, then play goes on. It's just, you know, as a defender yourself, Rene, that must be incredibly frustrating to watch.
Yeah, it just looks like it's sort of becoming impossible to defend naturally. I mean, especially with the handball situation. I mean, I don't really see what the problem was with the handball rule to start with. I think it was just fine as it was, sort of it being whether it was deliberate or not, depending on how far away you was from the ball.
But they wanted it to be more black and white, didn't they?
Yeah.
And in doing that, they basically had to draw up a set of rules, which is where those new handball rules come from, came into effect on the 1st of June. Look, it was an awesome game. I totally feel like we haven't done it justice. Go and watch the highlights, folks. So much to talk about. And in fact, you know, so many talking points within that game, summing up much of what we've been experiencing in this World Cup, whether it's a brilliant goal, whether it's a contentious decision. A fair result for both of you, though, if we're to step back from all the different decisions and just look at how each team played. Was it a fair result, Tim?
I think so, yeah. I think Australia was slightly unfortunate to go 2-0 down in the first place, maybe. I think probably 2-1 was about fair in the first half, but like I said, you look at the age of this Brazil team, 33-year-old Marta comes off, 41-year-old Formiga comes off, 34-year-old Cristiani has to come off, and kind of the young players that come on to replace them are basically a step below terms of quality, and Brazil just couldn't live with Australia in the second half.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there, Tim. I don't think it was a fair result. I think Australia were really fortunate to come away with the win. Yes, they dominated possession, but in my opinion, their final pass, their final cross, final shot wasn't good enough, and I think Brazil defended really well. Obviously, they've had to take three of their best players off. And obviously, we know how I feel about the last goal. And I thought Brazil's goals were actually quality. And I think that this is a really big missed opportunity for Brazil. So I think they should have at least come away with a point, in my opinion.
Well, someone who didn't agree, quote of the tournament alert. We need a big klaxon here. Sam Kerr, Australia's Sam Kerr, on live TV. This is what she had to say.
Oh, I'm so proud of the girls. We knew we were in it at halftime. And, you know, there was a lot of critics talking about us, but we're back, so suck on that one.
Goodness me. Okay, in our next game of the day, and we needed a breather after Brazil-Australia, didn't we? And we kind of got one, right? Li Ying scoring with a brilliant first-half volley to earn China a victory over debutante South Africa, who face elimination from this Women's World Cup. First things first, here's this South African team on their way to the match, belting out a bit of Whitney. Well, they won't be winning a World Cup of singing, that's for sure. Tim, it's harsh, wasn't it? Tim, like Brazil, but Brazil being more musically talented, if we're to hark back to the opponents of the last game we've discussed?
I think so, yeah. Marta's pretty handy on the ukulele, sorry.
I love that she plays a ukulele.
and centre-half Monica is possibly a better singer than she is a defender. Fantastic at the guitar as well. Definitely another career for her there, I think.
Well, I could get into that, I tell you. Good skills there. Okay, moving back to this game, what did China get right, or was it a case of just getting the job done against much lower ranked opposition, Tim?
I think it was a case of getting the job done. China really impressed me against Germany, the way they kind of really pressed high up on that German defence and forced transitions and turnovers. But this was a really different challenge for them because obviously South Africa weren't going to play like Germany. And South Africa were really impressive, the way they kind of banked up and made it difficult for China. But China didn't really look like they knew what to do. There were lots of kind of crosses being tossed in, and I know that's how they got their goal, but I don't think that's really how they wanted to play. But ultimately, they got the result that they really needed as well for progression. So I don't think they'll take many lessons, actually. I think they'll just take the result.
Yeah, it was scrappy by Chinese standards, wasn't it? Their style of play today. Certainly, I expected them to be a lot more organised against the opposition. Rene, you were impressed with China's Gu Yasha, though.
Yeah, I definitely thought she was their most dangerous player, especially in the first half. I think every time she got on the ball, she looked dangerous. And it's probably one of the first games I've seen in this World Cup where the majority of her crosses were really good quality, and I think they were probably unlucky not to put a couple more away because they did get on the end of them, but I think the runs into the box were probably a bit too early, so they wasn't able to convert it on goal. But yeah, she was definitely a big attacking threat for China in a game that wasn't exactly the most exciting on both sides.
Tim, looking at South Africa, they set up well, but no final ball really from them.
Yeah. It's kind of been quite a pleasing theme of this tournament, I think. If you take out Thailand, perhaps, that a lot of the underdogs have looked really tactically solid, because usually in a Women's World Cup by now, you have a few 6 or 7 nils, yeah. And we haven't really seen that. What we've seen is really tactically organised underdogs, and I think South Africa impressed me in both games.
Desiree Ellis, post-match, that's the South Africa coach, said, "We said it would be like a battle and like a final. Tonight we showed we're getting close. We gave as good as they gave." Well, reporting on the game, it's women's football journalist and a newly established offside rule favourite, Sophie Lawson. First things first, how's the dead body watch in the murderous basement, Sophie?
I saw a cat there earlier on today.
What, alive or dead?
Alive.
So things do officially live down there for longer than a few days.
I don't know how it got down there because I did close the door behind me. So I assume it was alive. It could have been
a ghost cat.
Could have been a ghost cat. Could have been the soul of someone else who'd had to endure the murder basement. I didn't ask.
No, I wouldn't have been able to ask either. What did the cat look like?
Black and white.
Oh, sounds like a ghost cat to me, Sophie. We need an update on the food situation. FIFA providing nothing but free bananas the last time we spoke. Have they upgraded the refreshments?
I'm happy to say earlier on today I had a free apple and a free nectarine.
Wow, this fruit's awesome from FIFA.
It is a veritable fruit salad in the press box. And if you're lucky, you might get a Lion bar or a Mars. But you've got to be very, very quick.
Very quick on the mark there. All right, listen, we must talk about the game.
Of course.
Wasn't the most outstanding of games, was it really? Give us your take on it.
I think it was a bit cagey. I think some nerves from both because they were both unlucky in their opening games. But I think China got it right. I've been a little bit ambivalent on China because they've had a lot of coaching upheavals since the last World Cup. I think they got that game plan right. They pressed very well. I don't really think South Africa quite knew what to do. They probably could have had more goals, China, but they also came up against a very good keeper.
So it's a job done for China, who go on to let off for a tie with Spain. South Africa faced Germany out of this tournament, really. So can you sum them up? Because it was their debutante tournament, wasn't it? And not a bad showing, really.
Not at all. I think very, very unlucky against Spain. You know, we've seen the new handball rule come in. We saw their second penalty was questionable. It was very similar to the one that France won yesterday. And I think we've already talked about that one quite a lot through
a
various
lot.
Different mediums.
Yes.
But I think they've impressed. You can see there is definite growth, not just in South Africa, the team, but in COSAFA, you know, teams in the South. And maybe this tournament was a little soon for them, but I think they've really given a good account of themselves when you look at, say, the performance rather than the results.
So this game dictating the berths in Group B after 2 out of 3 games played. Up top of Germany with 6 points, having won 2 out of 2. Spain in second on goal difference as they went against South Africa last week, but narrowly missed out on a point after that 1-0 loss to Germany. China are in third after their win over South Africa this evening, and newcomers South Africa at the bottom, yet to win a point at this tournament. Alors on danse. Alors on danse. You're listening to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition. It's me, Kate Borsay, alongside me, Spurs defender René Hector and Brazilian football expert, and he of many Arsenal blogs and podcasts, Tim Stillman. Hello, folks. Tomorrow, we're going to have such a fun day. What games we have to talk about. Let's start with England first. Lots of home interest in this one. They meet Argentina in Le Havre. Argentina, of course, proved tough opponents against Japan and held on to achieve their first ever Women's World Cup point. England with a 2-1 win against Scotland. And I think, Tim, we're going to be taking this game a little bit more seriously after Argentina's first one. Good resilience against Japan.
Yeah, outstanding. And you could see what it meant to the Argentina players afterwards. The kind of, I'm not even sure it was a celebration. It was more of a release from those Argentinian players, you know, lots of hugging, lots of tears, and the story of what they've been through for the last kind of couple of years, really, and even longer. It's just, these are stories that really need telling at this World Cup, as well as all of the kind of the great football and promoting the women's game. It's really worth shining a light on what's happening with kind of teams and countries like Argentina and their FAs. And actually, there's a really good piece in The Guardian at the moment about precisely what Argentina have been going through with their FA, and, you know, the really shocking conditions, and, you know, the Argentinian FA refusing to pay for hotels, and, you know, the girls are sleeping on the bus for away games and things like that. So, you know, Argentina, we associate them as this big powerhouse because of what they do in men's football, but in women's football, it's a totally different story.
And I know Phil Neville's been speaking today in the press conference, and he said that he hasn't discussed any of the previous encounters between England and Argentina. Some rich history between both sides, of course. But I guess it isn't relevant to this, really. It is perhaps for us as football fans, but not for the team, right?
No, yeah, I don't think there's really that rivalry there, particularly in the women's game. And I think with Argentina as well, you know, obviously maybe we'll take them a little bit more seriously after what they did against Japan. But I just have a feeling that point is like their whole World Cup. And I might be jinxing it, so blame me if it happens again. But I just don't see Argentina managing to do that again against England.
Well, Tony Duggan is training again, but Phil Neville says that this game's come a bit too early for her. So she's ruled out of the game. Demi Stokes fit and partnered up with Fizzer for the press conference today. Millie Bright, who picked up that shoulder injury against Scotland, is also back in training. So guys, thoughts on who might get a starting berth for this one? René, because she's fit, because she was with Phil up front in the press conference today. Demi Stokes, is she in for you?
Yeah, I think she's gonna get a start tomorrow. Demi Stokes offers probably a little bit more security at the back. She's very quick, very powerful. And I think Alex Greenwood, obviously, she's very good going forward and very good on set pieces. They're completely different players, but for me, Demi Stokes just tightens everything up a little bit more for me.
And I think we're only expecting a few changes from Phil Neville, whereas we had thought that there could be kind of wholesale changes, I suppose, Tim. Who for you, though, may sit this one out?
I definitely think Fran Kirby might sit this one out. She had another quite frustrating game against Scotland, and she really hasn't looked herself all season. You know, we know she's been suffering a little bit with a hamstring injury, and whether she's entirely over that, but she's just cutting quite a frustrated figure at the moment, and she came off. And I wouldn't be surprised if she sits this one out and someone like Karen Carney or Georgia Stanway comes in her place.
Although Millie Bright is fit again, I don't think she'll start. René, do you? Do you think we're looking at...
No, I don't think she'll start. I think that he maybe was going to use this game for a little bit of rotation anyway. So I think it's likely that Abby McManus will probably start at the back for England tomorrow.
Jodie Taylor, are we going to see her?
Maybe. I'm not so sure, actually. With the way Ellen White played against Scotland and she scored a goal and she looked very confident, I've got a feeling Phil Neville might keep her in. He said something in his press conference about some players deserving to play in this game. I wonder if he has Ellen White in mind. And particularly because sometimes you feel like England really lack that predatory goal scorer. And if Ellen White's off the mark and she's looking confident and playing against Argentina, I wonder if he'll just want to keep her going for at least 60 minutes in this game.
She does love the international stage, Ellen. She really does. And look, she's, you know, had a pretty checkered career when it comes to injury domestically. We know she's going to play for Man City next season, of course. It's exciting times for her. But yeah, she always produces on an international stage, and it was great to see her get on the score sheet against Scotland. Kira Walsh has also been talking today, Renee, about feeling inspired by the Argentina side. She said it reminds us of how lucky we are, the facilities we've got, the fact that Phil is our coach and we have countless amounts of staff. It puts into perspective what our nation does for us and inspires us to push on and go that little bit further. That's a nice mark of respect, really, from the England player there.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think sometimes, obviously, when you're playing in your own country, you can become quite sheltered and you just sort of think about what's happening in this country. And we've seen how much that women's football has grown in England, and I think obviously it's only right that we push more and more for equality. But it is refreshing to sort of hear about other countries' stories, and I think at the same time it sort of humbles us a little bit, and we realise actually we are one of the nations that are actually quite lucky, and that RFA has taken women's football really seriously. So yeah, I think that was a really nice touch from her.
And just to put that into context a little bit, there's another story from kind of the Argentinian camp. In 2017, they played a friendly. It was their first friendly their FA had arranged for them in 2 years. The players asked for £7 a day expenses, and the Argentinian FA turned them down and put the under-23s out. So that's the level of outright disrespect that their FA is showing to them. So there is a huge gulf between, you know, even if our FA can do more and we can push more, there is a huge gulf between what happens in England and what happens in perhaps South America and other parts of the world.
Well, with a bit more on this game, out learning French, watching football and now feeling slightly colder, it's over to Lindsay Hooper.
You are taking such pleasure in this. It gets quite chilly in the evenings. There was a torrential downpour at training earlier. I got quite wet. I had to take the waterproof jacket with me, and still that wasn't enough. I had to go and re-change and re-shower, and yeah, not used to this after Nice, where it was gorgeous weather.
Yes,
so
it sounds,
I'm definitely
like,
ready for that again.
Sounds like good old English Premier League reporting. It really does. You've just eaten, and we like to get an insight on this podcast as to what you digest, what fine French gastronomy you taste and sample. Tell us what you've just had for dinner. It must be lovely.
Oeuf, jambon, pommes frites.
So you basically had a fried breakfast.
I just wanted something cheap and cheerful that wasn't going to break the bank.
So ham and eggs and chips.
Yeah, and a bit of spinach, actually, but I don't know the French for spinach yet.
That is a child's meal, Lindsay Hooper. That is what I'd give my kids on a Saturday rainy afternoon.
I'll tell you what, there's so many people listening to this going, there's absolutely nothing wrong with ham, egg and chips.
It's just not very adventurous. I would expect more from you, who likes to throw yourself into these localities. Epinard, by the way, spinach.
I was in very close distance of someone eating snails.
Well, yes. So you didn't want to try the escargot.
They apparently tasted and smelt very garlicky.
Yes.
So I thought that might not be good for match day tomorrow.
Can you promise me that you'll try them before the end of the trip, though?
Yeah, I'll have a little slither.
And what about frog's legs?
I don't know. It's, apparently they taste like chicken. So yeah, maybe I can.
What about horse?
No way. I draw the line at horse.
Okay. She draws the line at horse. There we go. That's a catchphrase, isn't it? All right. Phil Neville and the England presser today. Tell us the team news.
All in all, it's pretty good for Phil Neville right now because he's got a fully fit squad apart from Tony, who should be back for the next match.
And what did Phil have to say? And what did Demi have to say? Anything interesting from that press conference?
Most gasps in the press conference, I think, came when he said that there would only be about two changes, because he's promised that he wants to stick with some of the good performers against Scotland that have earned the right to retain their place.
You see, he's kind of changing the record a little bit there, isn't he? Because we were led to believe that it would be a pretty different lineup, and that a lot of his lineups, well, all of his lineups would be different. So we'll just have to wait and see. So lots of focus on that game. It should be an interesting one to watch tomorrow. But England have the upper hand, right?
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be the same as Scotland, where there was times in that match. I mean, he kept referring to this 11-minute period in the second half where he felt everyone down tools and that everyone wasn't quite working to full capacity. But remember, there was that humidity in Nice. We've joked about the weather, but the heat didn't really go for the players, didn't benefit them either side. So they're not going to have that this time. In fact, they could well be playing in a downpour like we had today. So I fully expect him to really push this team to get a full 90 minutes of consistency out of them. And I think if we saw that sort of performance that they put in the first half for 90 minutes, I think Argentina are really going to struggle to come away with anything. But how many can they score? Because everybody's now talking about France and the great performances they've put in, USA, who of course scored 13. And we've seen Australia come back against Brazil. So everyone's wondering, you know, is there three or more goals in this game for England? And really, that would do confidence the world of good going into the Japan match next week.
Thanks very much to Lindsay Hooper. I tell you what, I'm looking forward to what the next French word is that she comes up with to serve up to us here on the Offside Rule as we all take part in Lindsay's French vocabulary lessons. I feel like we're all part of it learning together. Let's go to the next game of the day on Friday, Japan versus Scotland, 2015 runners-up Japan. Well, they need a win, don't they, after they failed to break down Argentina earlier in the week. But Scotland will be fighting for their first points of the tournament. Before we get our teeth stuck into this one, producer Abby spoke with BBC Scotland's women's sport reporter Heather Dewar to get the latest from the Japanese and Scotland camps and to discuss slightly quirkier training methods with rubber chickens.
Do you know what? It has to be the most bizarre training session I think I have ever been to in my entire life. So it didn't start with the rubber chickens, let me tell you that. Okay. It started perfectly normally with them doing all their warm-ups and jumping up and down and using various different techniques. And then all of a sudden, near the end, obviously as members of the press, you only get 15 minutes access normally to these training sessions. And then near the end, they brought out this chicken, a rubber chicken, and they just started flinging it around. And I was like, what is going on? There was a lot of confusion among the press. I mean, so yeah, it was very, very strange. What it was meant to do, apparently, was be a game of tig. Apparently, you can't move when you get thrown the chicken. You've got to stand there. And the aim is to hit your teammates and then they're out. And that's it. But so there was a lot of flinging around of a rubber chicken yesterday. We got some great shots of it, actually, in slow motion. And it looks fantastic. But yeah, very odd, very odd.
Oh, maybe they're just trying to get to grips with the mascot, Etty. But anyway, we'll move on from the rubber chickens. Let's talk about the football itself. Shelley Kerr has been giving a press conference. Can you give us an insight as to what she's been saying ahead of tomorrow's match against Japan?
The key facts, though, she was up at her press conference this afternoon. She says that Scotland want to build on their decent second half against England when they take on Japan tomorrow. And she was emphasising that they really do need to be better on the ball if they're to create chances, as they didn't do that well in the England game. And she also said that the Japan result against Argentina, that goalless draw, of course, could make Japan even more dangerous and make Scotland's job more difficult. I guess, you know, Japan will be going into this one 100% looking to win this. I was at the Japanese presser this morning and I thought it was really interesting, actually, and had a fantastic chat with a former player, actually, Nagasato, who told me that she thinks it'll be difficult for Japan to win the tournament. And as far as beating Scotland, she says that they're a very good team and there's a chance that Scotland can actually win this game. But the Japanese head coach she's been speaking to today, Asaka Takakura, and she thinks that her side must win against Scotland if they're to progress beyond the group stage. A draw or defeat, of course, could result in an early exit for them. And she said, we must win, and every player understands that. So she had to field off quite a few difficult questions today in that Japanese press conference from the Japanese media in particular, who, of course, you know, they've gone through the times when they've seen Japan winning the World Cup back in 2011, then making the finals in 2015. So the head coach says, you know, we don't get angry. I just look to think about what we can do next. And she again laboured on the point that they want to play aggressively, not defensively. And they'll be looking to think about getting more goals in the game. So, yeah, when you speak to a lot of the people who were there this morning at that Japan training session, they all say the pressure is on Japan for this one. And it's interesting as well that, you know, when I was speaking to Nagasato, she was telling me more about the game in Japan. You'd think that having won the World Cup in 2011, that the women's game would have progressed significantly since then. But it hasn't. It's actually regressed it's decreased in popularity, and the number of spectators is actually going down. And she puts this down to the fact that Japan isn't good, in her words, at managing the sport, and that it can't grow the popularity at grassroots level, because she believes that the Japanese Football Federation are just not doing enough to make that happen. And I asked her whether she feared for the women's game as a whole in Japan, and she told me that it's, if they don't get through the group stages here, she is worried that people might forget about the team altogether. So lots of pressure on Japan to win this one, and I would imagine that Scotland will be, you know, looking to use that to their advantage.
Heather Dewar there. Rene, most importantly, have you ever trained with a rubber chicken?
Keep your eye on the chicken. You've got 40 seconds to get them out. Do not go outside the corner.
Or perhaps give me your most unusual training opponent.
I can't say I have, to be honest. I think the most unusual thing I've done a few years ago, I think I trained in a tiger onesie once.
Okay.
But not too many props, actually, at Spurs. Maybe we need to up our banter game, I think.
Well, yeah, because chicken sounds good, as long as you don't get egg on your face. Yeah. I'd like to know about the tiger onesie quickly. What was the situation with that?
Do you know what? It's actually quite worrying that I don't remember. I feel like it may have been an occasion like Christmas or Halloween or something. But yeah, he was supposed to come dressed up. And I think I'm actually one of the only people that actually came dressed up. So everybody else had their kit on. And I was the one left in my tiger onesie with face paint on. So yeah.
Fantastic. Put in a good show there. OK, well, let's go on to the game. We didn't see much of Kim Little when she played against England, did we? But Shelley Kerr, perhaps, Tim, going to reorganise her tactics to make the best out of her star player.
Yeah, I really hope so. I'm really excited about this game, actually. I think it's fascinatingly poised, particularly with Japan not getting the result they wanted from the first game. I think Japan are there for the taking from Scotland if they're brave. If Scotland go with two up front and bring Jane Ross in, if they put Lisa Evans back on the right-hand side, and I think they can trust themselves with four in midfield. You know, players like Kim Little, Caroline Weir, they're top quality players, and I think they can take Japan on technically. And I think if they're really brave and they go for it, I really can see them beating Japan.
Rene, you've come up against Erin Cuthbert this season, along with Kim Little, one of the players that we were talking about, of course, before the England game. But she was left pretty isolated for it, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think that she sort of didn't have much service. I think when she did look dangerous, it was probably a bit of individual brilliance from her, because we obviously know that she's extremely good at dribbling and being really direct. But as Tim said, I think I'd like to see Jane Ross come on as a target player, and maybe see Erin Cuthbert a little bit deeper so that she can sort of hold the ball up and really get Erin into playing. And yeah, hopefully she can try and find some good crosses in for Jane Ross, who we know is a great goal scorer.
Christy Murray, the only injury doubt for Scotland, although we don't know where she's at the moment because seemingly all the journalists at the press conference forgot to ask. So we'll wait and see what happens with the lineup tomorrow. Tim, disappointing so far from Japan. We've mentioned this, and we've heard Heather actually talk about how it's not a happy picture over there, according to former player Nagasato anyway, going against the grain with progress that's happening all over the world with women's football. This has got to be a travesty, right, for the 2011 winners, and that win was so important to their nation after the back of the natural disasters there, and runners-up in 2015. They can't give up on the game of football, can they?
Yeah, I know, that would be a real shame. They've probably been my favourite national team to watch over the last decade or so. The way they play football, I think they're so brave. They introduce young players as well. You know, in their first game, they started a 21 and a 22-year-old in central midfield, which maybe wasn't the right decision in the end, but it was really brave. And the way they play their football, and they've got like a really nice join up between the way the men's team and the women's team play football as well. They seem to have like a real philosophy. So it'd be a real, real shame if they drop that, because they've just been one of the powers of women's football for the last 15 years or so.
Yeah, they have been impressive. All sandwiched between that Group D action, Group C come to play. Well, the Australian win over Brazil today leaves Group C wide open. Italy will be looking to go top with two wins out of two. They meet Jamaica. The Rega girls, however, need a result against the Italians to keep their World Cup dreams alive. So plenty to play for in this one. Italy shocked Australia and us all, really, in their opening match, Rene. Will this be a little bit easier for them, this one, Jamaican opposition?
I think it will definitely be a different test. Obviously, I think Jamaica will sit off Italy a little bit more, and Italy will probably dominate possession. But it's just a case of being patient. I think they were patient in their game against Australia. Obviously, they ended up coming away with a 2-1 win. So I think Italy should be pretty comfortable, but we've seen in the World Cup so far anyway that the underdogs have been able to defend really well and sort of keep the favourites out for long periods. So it'll be interesting, but I think Italy should come away with a win.
As for Jamaica, Tim, before the tournament, we were billing them as a very exciting team to watch. We're all looking forward to seeing their attacking prowess anyway. But I don't think we've really seen too much of that from them. Certainly Khadija Shaw, their young star striker, has really failed to make her mark so far. Are we going to see something more in this game from them?
I really hope so, actually, because as we saw today, Brazil aren't great defensively. And I was actually a little bit surprised that they didn't cause Brazil more trouble than they did going forward on the counter-attack. I think they're going to set up very similarly for this game. And as Rene says, that's going to be a really different challenge for Italy. But Jamaica, they seem actually a little bit like South Africa in that they seem to be quite well set up for the counter with Bunny Shaw in particular, really nice pacey striker. And I'd love to see more from her. But I do think that Italy are going to win this one, maybe not comfortably, but if Jamaica are to do anything in this game, I really, really think they need to see more from Bunny Shaw up front.
Well, a win against Jamaica will put Italy top of Group C above Brazil and Australia. It's their first World Cup, though, in 20 years. How far can they realistically go in this competition? Let's throw that one to both of you. Tim?
I think last 16, I think they've got a fantastic opportunity now to qualify. The fact that Australia and Brazil have both lost a game each blows this group rather wide open for them. So I think they could come out of this group. In fact, I think they will, because I think they'll cause Brazil some trouble as well, particularly if Brazil won't have Formiga, possibly not Marta. So this is a fantastic opportunity for them. I have to say, once it gets to the last 16, I'm not sure I see them going a lot further than that, though.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that they will get out of the group, and I do think they've got a strong chance of topping the group. But as Tim said, I can't really see them getting much further than the knockout stages. I just don't think they've got it quite tight enough at the back, and I think they'll leak a few goals in the knockout stage.
All right, so score predictions to round this thing up, please, folks. Jamaica versus Italy.
I'm going to go 2-0 to Italy.
3-1.
To Italy?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Japan versus Scotland.
I'm going to go 2-1 Scotland.
1-0 Scotland.
Okay, and Argentina versus England?
I think England are going to win 3-0.
I think England are going to win 5-0.
Oh, goodness me, I like that. Straight out of there. Okay, well, essentially the same result there for both of you, but different scorelines. All right, thank you, Tim and Rene, for your contributions. We're seeing you both on Sunday, the Dream Team. You're back. Now that you're comfortable with each other, we'll have all sorts of fun. Can I ask you if you could bring your guitars in?
Oh, okay.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? All right, we'll bring it in.
If you remember, bring the guitars in. Producer Abby, is she here on Sunday? No, Producer Abby's not here on Sunday, so we're missing the final little conduit of this guitar trio. But maybe we can do some warming up. Anyway, I will leave that for you guys to organise. More fun, frolics and footballs coming from you too, of course. Well, whilst you wait for our next podcast, you can get us at Offside Rule Pod everywhere you look. And head to our website, offsiderulepodcast.com, for more content from France. Loads of stuff on the website for you to gen up if you've missed some of the action so far. We'll leave the final word of the show to our French language expert, Lindsay Hooper.
Earth, jambon, pommes frites.
All right, Lindsay. Bonsoir.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.